Hello, everyone. Zane, tell me, have you missed this introductory sound? Tell me.
I don't think that sound will ever get old.
Yes, to be fair, probably the motif, this music, probably got old for quite some time and before we start using it. But yes.
Anyway, it's so old, it's retro now.
Yes. Nothing new under the moon. Okay, that's new year, new season, new us, and we finally have started this year 2021. This is the first episode zero, I would guess. Season one, episode zero is
indexing like a programmer.
Yes, of course. Yeah. And I actually don't have too many topics, but the topics that I have are kind of special. First, I want to start with partly it will be self-promo because this is thing that I do. Partly I don't care. And partly it will be because it's actually a very interesting topic. And the first topic that I want to chat about is obviously education. I'm trying to disrupt education for quite some time. And recently I finally found the way of applying Taleb anti-fragile philosophy in the education field. And that was a challenge for me for quite some time. So I've been teaching now for like 10 years, I think. I have like 20,000 people who finished Java. I have people who working in Google after my Java courses. Like I have many, many students. And for all this time, I was applying classical education. I would give them the program. I would give them the videos. I would give them the materials. I would give them the practice. They would study. They would be happy and they will finish the course and everyone happy and so on and so on. But I was not quite liking it, especially because it was contradicting my personal view on the world, how education should be. It was fragile by nature. And what I mean by fragile, as soon as you finish in course, you need to start doing the same course again because it's no longer relevant. It's stale. That bothered me for a long, long time. A, it's stale. B, if you're doing practice, your practice always connects to a stale theory that you're creating. And now think about this interesting fact. This theory is the thing that is simplest to find right now online. Like if I will tell you, we're going to learn classes in Java, what class is and how to use classes, how to create instances. Very likely you can find tons of the videos about this yourself, like easily Googling. So I'm creating a fragile content that's stale almost immediately after the creation, and I'm creating this trap for the practice, because if I'm creating exercises, they need to help you to memorize theory. Therefore, I cannot update practice. And if tomorrow there is a new Java that introduces new way to instantiate classes, I will have to redo theory again. That's not the only problem. When I start thinking about this this fragility of the courses, I realize that majority of the courses, they never working backwards from user because they have this fragile content. They're not incentivized for the student to fulfill their target. If the students want to apply for a job as Java developer, that's the problem the students have. Majority of the courses usually don't have these incentives. They don't incentivize you to fulfill this. What they incentivize is to give you a feeling that you're actually growing as Java developer. They incentivize to tell that everyone can become developer. They incentivize to tell you that you can and keep you engaged and give you a feeling that you're growing as a developer up to the end point. The best courses that I learned, applying amazing magic, either consciously or subconsciously, in the end of the course, when you're speaking with the students, they will tell you, yeah, I now understand what I else need to do to apply for Java developer. I now have a good Java basics, but yes, I need 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So it's effectively that the course itself transforms idea about what the end goal for the student himself or herself. So in the end, the student now convinced that when he or she applied, he or she had a different goal than the one, because this is what they achieved. They still don't have interview passed, but they now convinced that they know something about Java and they know about next step. And they still have...
What you're saying is that you're changing kind of like the student's goal from like, this course will help me learn Java, to like, by the time they're done, they're thinking of it as, this course has helped me learn how to learn Java.
Yes, something along those lines. Yes, you're actually absolutely right. And this is not hard to observe yourself. And now I'm going to tell you the rule that you pretty sure will immediately spot for not only courses, but in even education in universities. Almost none of the online educational system tells you percent of people that actually graduated who fulfilled their initial target. They will put success story on the map, but they will never tell you percent of success story among the people who graduated. And that was strike to me as the second interesting part. Since, yes, they are not incentivized to fulfill your dream. They just need to catch you saying, here is a success story. At the same time, they never will tell you how many of the graduation people are among the success story and how them are not. And when I try to plot results of the normal Java courses on the market, I found that majority of them, if you take 100% people who apply, 10% will fail, 90% will succeed. Out of this 90%, maybe 5% actually have reached the target that they put in front of themselves when they applied. So all this combined with the fact that the theory is the simplest things to find, and all the courses trying to produce theory is the biggest part of their program, I try to ask yourself how we can redefine education to apply idea of anti-fragility in the education. Now I'm going to pause, and I want to ask you, my friend, what would be your idea? Like, how you would refactor this horrible old concept that you need a theory, program, and practice tied to a theory, and then examine the end?
Well, I'm really trying to wrap my head around like what fragility and anti-fragility even looks like in the educational space. Because that's an interesting idea of like how you would apply this concept there. So what you had said, if I understood you correctly, was that the fragility comes from a few sources. One of them is that information is consistently going out of date. Another Yep. source is that the underlying theory, there's like lots and lots of sources for the underlying theory, so you're not really standing out from other folks. I mean, there's not, that's another aspect of it. I'm not sure if there's other theories, like other sources of fragility beyond those two.
The second part, that conceptually current program of the course tied to a theory. So even the part that not stale as often are in this trap. Like, for example, if you have an exercise, this exercise tied to a theory. So fragility of the
demonstrate
theory.
That exercise, like you're using like exercises that go stale to illustrate timeless theories. So your videos of these theories will become stale over time.
Yep.
I see.
And I was speaking about exercise, not only the one that you're using in theory, but the one that you're giving to students. If you teach
homework assignments.
Exactly. You cannot just change homework assignments. Homework assignment looks like anti-fragile because you can tune it easily, so adaptable. But in reality, homework assignments tied to a theory. If a theory fragile, homework assignment also fragile, just because you cannot just change homework assignments as you wish.
So now how do you make this anti-fragile?
Yep.
And like the thing with anti-fragile, I mean, the key concept is like, hey, when you expose it to stress, it should be getting better. So at least that to me is almost implying like you're offering a way for maybe for students to update the classes, for students to say, oh, hey, like have the course material up on GitHub or something. You have video or material is generated that way, and you almost have a Wikipedia style system which people can use to keep the course up to date themselves.
That's I like it. That's actually a pretty cool idea, where they co-owner of the course.
Yeah, and ideally, if you're generating the course, like you're not making videos of yourself doing the course, you're generating it from PDFs or something, then like those could be regenerated easily. But that's one potential approach.
And that's, by the way, one of the part that we end up, one of the part of the system that we applied. So are you ready to for the system?
All right. Yes, please tell me.
You actually were, you described quite accurate, actually, the part of the system, which is quite cool. So, okay, we decided to work backwards. You have a goal to pass a job interview. Like, let's imagine that you, Zane, want to pass an interview. Like, there is no problem for you to pass an interview. But imagine parallel universe where you still do have challenges on the interview. We cannot just emulate interview for you because you will not pass it right now if you're in that stage. So, but if you think about the interview is just a challenge and the problem that you need to solve in that room. Now, the question, can we come up with a slightly simpler problem that you might be able to solve? The answer usually yes, we can come up with slightly simpler problem. Now, the question, can you solve that problem? And usually, like, if the person has zero knowledge in the field, the answer would be no. But if you apply this rule, you can build a chain of problems that leads up to your zero state. And let me give you an example. Imagine it's a first lesson, and this is, by the way, now the real example, the first lesson. First lesson in what is now known Kovalevsky Academy. So imagine there is a first lesson.
Nice name.
First lesson of the first week, sorry, lesson zero, week zero. And you're getting the Google document that you can update with your fellow teammates that says install GDK. And the test would be to run Java and simple jar that we're giving to you. And you have a day. That's completely doable within a day. Like, completely. You can find YouTube that explains what Java is, what Java command, how does it work, how to install GDK, what is jar file, how to install it. And you can share this knowledge with your fellow coworker easily. And that would be your level day zero, week zero.
Oh, that's interesting.
The document itself is the only thing that we're giving to you. And effectively, we're exposing you to a problem by problem by problem without giving any pointers what to learn. The only thing that we're giving is A, the problem set, and B, automated way to test it, and C, deliberately ambiguous problem, so it's actually very hard to solve it on your own. So as soon as any of your co-workers, like in this particular example that I just gave to you with Java, imagine that we will give you the jar that requires something to be set in ClassPass. And this is something that will be automatically tested, but omitted in the initial Google Docs that is given. And there will be 5 or 6 steps like that. And if you're trying to solve it yourself, it will be more than a day. But if everyone's sharing which step they have found, they actually can solve it together. And these axes stimulate them to real-world scenario. When you have half-ambiguous problems that the consumer gives to you, and you're not alone. This is not a university where we're checking that you can solve it alone. We're checking that you can solve it in a group. It's impossible to solve it without a group.
That is really interesting. You know, you should have, as one of your challenges, you should have them upgrade Pip to the latest version. it might be more than a day.
For some of the challenges, there is 2 days, but yes. Yes, in many cases, I think you're right. And slowly, step by step, as we go with that, we're teaching people Java. But not just Java, we're teaching them eventually to pass the interview. And like, to give you a perspective, in the end of the third... Oh, yeah, and second part. When I mentioned at the beginning that normal course has 90% of people who finishing, but only like small fraction who actually fulfill the idea. We're flipping this around. We're telling to the people that it's absolutely okay to fail, and you can start from scratch. So you can fail in this group, and start the scratch, each group is effectively always 3-week boot camp, if you want. We expect that only half people survive the first week. Only 20% survive the second week, and like last 10% that will finish boot camp will actually be able to do what we promised they will be able to do. Go ahead.
This is actually very similar to what Lambda School does. It's interesting. Are you do you know how Lambda School does their weekly boot camp or their sprints?
No, I don't. It's
very similar to what you're describing. They basically have, I believe, like 9 1-month long modules. And at the end of each month, if you feel like you haven't really understood the material well, then you can say, hey, I just want to do this month all over again. And you join the batch of students who like, and then they start every month. And you just join the batch that would have started, like the previous batch effectively. You just go back a batch and you redo that module with that batch. And you hopefully understand the stuff much, much better after that. So it sounds exactly like what you're describing.
Yep, with small caveat that technically we're trying to tune the system. We're now soon starting the third group, and we're trying to tune the system that will prevent you even to finish if you actually haven't understood everything. And this is quite simple if you're starting with a problem. Yeah, if you wasn't able to finish the problem, that's it. And you have usually very specific deadlines. If you pass the deadlines, your only option to restart from scratch and try with the next group, with the next group, with the next group. And specifically to emphasize that we're not incentivized to get you in the second cycle, we're actually not asking for your money if you apply reapplying. Like, you can do it for free any amount of times. And if you will finish till the end, we know that you actually can do this. And these numbers, like 50% and 10% finishing, only looks bad. We already have the first sign that If you incorporate final goal, and what I mean by this, if you will say how many people finishing with X amount of tries, it's much more than 10%. It might be like 20 to 30%. Still much lower than any other course. But this 20, 30%, they are much more closer to their goal than in just random course in JavaRush. Oh, sorry, JavaRush is not known in English word. And in order to prove them, we actually have students who went away to another course, then come back. Because they learned that specific topic that was preventing them to solve the problem. They learned it in a way that was slow, with a speed and pace that they appreciate. Then they come back to actually take the challenge and finally take a practice, amount of practice that they need to learn it proper way.
Nice. That is really cool. One more concept from Lambda School, which you might find interesting, is they have this thing of mentorship, where basically after you've finished a couple modules, you start basically mentoring. You get paired with someone who was in the previous module, and you're effectively assigned to be their mentor. So if they have questions, like, you're the first person they go to if their own peer group can't answer it. So you kind of like, I mean, you learn a lot by just teaching someone. So this is kind of like another way that those folks help reinforce the lessons.
And this is, I don't want to say exactly, but very close to what we're applying. The only difference that because we have like half of the group usually would be people from previous group, and we're labeling them as a mentor because they already passed like half of the cycle. They know what to do. They can answer organizational questions. They can teach material. And we emphasizing go to them first. Like, if you don't know what to do, go to them. And like, and yeah, they might be able to help. Not always, but you know.
Nice. Dude, this is really cool.
Yeah, and so far it's been working really well. We designed the whole program in four months, effectively. 1 month where we're teaching coding, like just literally coding. But at the end of that, you will be really well. Like, it's everyone who finishing, when they started with zero knowledge, and then they can tell that, oh, I can reverse string with my eyes closed. Like, literally, I no longer need any hints or, you know, my notepad with all my notes around the course. No, they can do it easily now. Then the second part is Java. And in the Java, we applying the same concept. Do you know what Spring is in Java?
A Spring, no.
this is like a huge default framework for web development, where you can easily create web servers, say, here's my HTTP pass, here is where GET should go, here is where POST should go. It's like probably Flask for Python, like the default framework. Spring is so huge that it cannot be exactly compared with Flask. It's much bigger. It's like Java EE. Java EE. You might have heard that thing.
Okay.
So how do you teach people for Java EE? We again apply on the second level the same principles where we're actually saying, okay, you will start with writing down your own buffer for I/O. Using that buffer, you will start writing your own server that processes HTTP. Like yourself, you will be parsing HTTP. Now, when you have that, you will start to doing custom annotation that allow you to map particular classes to particular HTTP calls. Now, in the end, you can collect all these. Oh, yeah, and we're doing some custom SQL query on top of CSV file. Like that you're writing the SQL query. Now, collecting all these, you can finally implement the backend with libraries that you actually created yourself by solving problem by problem by problem by problem. And then when we actually introduce students to Spring, they already know why the thing exists, like why exactly this is done the way it's done.
Oh, interesting. You're really giving them the conceptual framework for like what exactly is going on under the hood before they have to really use it and figure out like, so what's the point of all this stuff?
Exactly. And unlike fragile system when you have to teach people, if tomorrow new Java is released, the only thing that we're testing that their class actually responds correctly on HTTP call. That's it. Like if you will apply Lambda or streams or anything new that doesn't exist even today, the course will be there. We don't care. Like literally, you solve the problem. That's all that matters. Obviously, there are like I've been reflecting this for quite many years right now. To be fair, that any anti-fragile system based on some fragile assumption, like even Taleb actually put a fragile assumption that US not going under, like that, he has this saying that, oh, US can always print US dollars. Yes, this assumption that US is here. me, who was born in a country that no longer exists, kind of experienced this firsthand.
There's nothing that is perfectly anti-fragile. You can just make things anti-fragile along certain dimensions.
Correct, yes. And in this particular case, obviously, we're throwing a lot of assumptions like, oh, HTTP will be the most used, we're still teaching Java and stuff like that. And we're slowly trying to increase this principle to other fields. Like, for example, can we do ML? Very likely, we can teach AI the same way. We slowly have a bootcamp when you're writing your neural network processor or framework, and then on the next bootcamp, you're training MNIST. And on the next bootcamp, you're just giving a task, hey, can you recognize the lanes on these pictures? Go and use whatever you want. You now know how they work. Now make a choice of framework, learn it, and like come back, solve this problem, and see how it goes. And this is effectively, to some certain extent, mentor as a service, if you want. Because what mentor usually gives to a mentee, the problem set that the mentee need to solve until the next sync up. That's it, like nothing more. And small guidance. The guidance comes from your peers. The problem comes from us. And that's it.
Yeah, and I like that there's two general types of methods that I've seen people when they're teaching stuff. There is teaching people how to use a specific tool. And then there, which is like kind of the classic, here's how you do Java. Then there is a teaching people how to solve classes of problems, and which is the much more versatile one. And it's sounding like you're really veering into the second one. Like, you have this type of problem. Here's like, figure out how to solve it by giving them like little by little pieces of like, start off with something simple, more and more advanced, which is really what video games all do. Like, they don't make you sit through exactly how you fire a gun. They just give you a simple version of the problem, and they gradually make it more and more complex and more advanced. So, and they're teaching people, here's how you solve problems within the scope of this game. So I'm liking the philosophical approach that you're taking with this course.
And so
I'm really excited to see where you take it.
And so far, the first feedback are very positive, like from the people who actually finish, very, very positive. And they don't even see this as a competitor to other course, because as I said, some of the students had to go away on another course and then come back. And like, yeah, it's... So we'll see. I will report back in like half a year, because now it takes 1 month for a group. So we finish December group, we about to finish January group, and February group will be the third one. And also the third in the February, we're starting the second level where you will be rewriting from scratch spring, because right now we only done the first level where it's just coding for someone who never coded before. And people like it, really like it, the people who finish it. But yet again, you know, it's like a military. If you humiliating someone, that someone will have inherited and thought that what that person achieved is cost a lot, because he or she went through the humiliation. That's classical military things, why everyone's so proud that they finish initial military training, because that training was really hard and humiliating. So there should be someone something to it, right?
So how long does the course take from start to finish, if in the best case scenario?
So the full program consists four boot camps. Each one is 3 weeks.
Okay.
The coding one, then this Java one, which is effectively implementing Spring, then actually doing real app with the thing that you implemented on two boot camps before. And the final boot camp specifically focus on problem solving with the concept of, with a focus on interviews. Because we all know that interviews has a very specific set of problems that like solvable within 45 minutes and stuff like that. So we're teaching them to solve problems, but then we're adjusting their focus to a particular set of problems that they need to be specifically good at to pass the interview. That affected 4 months.
Yeah. Okay. Now you've got me thinking of like the anti-programming training program, which was like, here, I will teach you exactly how to code stuff and to ace your interviews. And like you master how to like program, like do coding interviews with this. But that's the extent of your coding knowledge. And you start working somewhere and you have absolutely no idea how to do anything because you have zero actual understanding of anything. Which sounds like a very theoretically doable course.
Yeah, it's to be fair, you don't even need to go to course. There are just set of people who are good in the interview because they're going to interview very often. They have more practice. That doesn't mean they're better skilled. That doesn't mean that they are more qualified. They just go to interview often, and because
interviewing is a skill.
Not exactly.
It's a separate set of skills. Well, what do you mean not exactly?
So if you're going to eye doctor, you can say that passing 100% score on eye doctor is a skill. Sure, you can memorize the numbers that the doctor shows on each row and get 100% score. So that is a skill that you can acquire, and you will be proudly saying that I can pass 100% score on my eye doctor, irrespectively of what your actual score is. So to that extent, that is a skill, but the overall process trying to fight this skill constantly.
Right, and to rephrase, like there are a set of skills which will help you do much really good at interviews, which do not necessarily correlate to actual on-the-job performance. And it is in the interest of companies to make the difference between those two set of skills, like the interview skills versus actual job skills, as close to each other as possible. But that is a long uphill battle.
True. There is, though, the reason of not creating specific course for that. I mean, obviously, that's a specific course that says, like, you don't need to learn coding, you just need to learn ABC. Because as you said, if people actually will not perform well, this will be a red flag if you came from that course. The idea here, this at some point will start contradict initial goal of the student, because it will be disadvantage to put on your CV that you found in this. But overall, I totally agree with you. That's like absolutely doable, like 100%.
Yeah, definitely not recommending creating a course like this. I just had my evil possibilities hat on for a moment.
Why not creating? Come on. this the law of demand and supply. If there is a demand, there will be supply. To be fair, I'm skeptical that if you want that specific things, you should just go to interview quite often. Like, you just should. That is pretty much the course itself, in itself.
Well, going to interviews is definitely really helpful, but there are a specific set of skills even then that you need. You need to be able to reflect on your interviews. You need to be able to even get into the interviews, which requires like some resume work, because without a good resume, you don't get into the interviews in the first place. And so there's still a few prerequisites, I would say. Like, you, just the average person going to like 20 interviews might not necessarily have that understanding required to like get the value out of going to a bunch of them. I mean, a lot of people probably would, but it's not the only thing.
Yeah, I think you're actually right. If I don't know how to code and I'm going to interview, yeah, I don't think I will learn anything useful from that interview. That's right. That's for sure, yes. Okay. So I think we spent enough time on this one. I will report back in half a year to see how it's going. For now, it's going really, really well. By the way...
But, just out of curiosity, mm-hmm. I don't know if this applies to our listeners or not, but I'm curious. Where would one go to sign up for your class?
Oh, so because it's in... right now we have more demand that we can cover, so there is no like even public website. On my YouTube channel, there is a broadcast message. We're starting a group. This like almost 2 months old, because we had like several hundreds of people who signed up, and we're still processing that bunch of people. So go to YouTube channel. If you do know Russian, there is already a video that broadcasts details and have a sign-up form, but that sign-up form as of today closed. But we will publish very soon a new broadcast about future groups where you can sign up.
Dude, your videos are like pretty well made. I'm liking the intros, outros, and like you've got some professional-looking stuff here.
Camtasia. It's called Camtasia.
Camtasia, okay. Yes. nice.
Yeah, but overall, I should not avoid the fact that it's a team. So, like, it's majority of the people who are doing editing, who helping with video and the content. So, it's you should not be attributing the good quality of video to me, because realistically, I'm just the one that looking in the camera. Okay. So with that, let's move forward. I wanted to chat with you, my friend, and ask you and then share my setup. What's your home setup? Because I drastically changed mine. So I want to learn your and then share mine.
It's my home office setup?
Yes, exactly. What type of monitors, keyboard, what do you use? Tell me.
All right. So I have a probably very non-traditional setup. Well, I'll start off with the traditional part. Mm-hmm. Got dual monitors with 27-inch monitors on monitor arms.
Which monitors?
I've got, let's see, one is an LG, one is an
LG.
I don't even know, like, man. Dude, I don't know. I took what I could get.
I see.
At a reasonable looking price on Amazon. I did not pay very close attention to what I was getting.
Okay.
And same with the monitor arm, like cheapest one I got on Amazon. But then where it gets interesting is I've got a Kinesis Freestyle Pro as mm-hmm. my keyboard. So this is like a pretty nice keyboard. It's got it's a split keyboard with a keyboard that can be set in an angle. So it's pretty good ergonomics with that one.
Kinesis Freestyle. Freestyle, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But actually, you have the their bowl-shaped keyboard, right? So you've got the next upgrade from what I have.
No. I have a different branch. I have Advantage. Advantage.
Yeah.
It's not the upgrade, or it's just a different branch. It's
It's the most more expensive version. So I mentally consider it an upgrade. It's probably mostly better for ergonomics. That is, like, the Kinesis top of the line version edition.
Yeah, they are more so your keyboard's targeting people who like ergonomics, but they also have a habit of using exactly same layout that you will find on other keyboards because it's effectively keyboard split.
People who don't want to relearn how to use a keyboard. I tried the Advantage and spent 2 days on it, and I was like, I can't get used to this. And then only later I realized I'm supposed to dedicate a week or two to learning it. I was expecting to pick it up very quickly.
Yeah, the biggest thing is thumbnails, your thumbs, big thumbs. That's the biggest problem because they are completely doing the new job, and it will pay out after. But yes, this learning curve is horrible. Yeah, it's really horrible.
Yeah, I am kind of like seriously thinking about giving it a second shot now. Now that I realize how long I should expect.
I would highly suggest to do so, like really highly suggest. And one thing to be ready, though, there will be no way back. Like as soon as my office started at home, I had to buy a second keyboard, like just because no way I would be typing the old keyboard. It's, yeah. Yeah, that's just it. On top of that, it supports macros, reprogramming keys. So, and this is that... this is other thing that I no longer can live without. Yeah.
I'm actually curious, what kind of stuff do you use macros for? Because this one does have macros as well, but I barely use them.
No. Oh, okay, sorry. I'm using only reprogramming the keys. I never have used macros on one, on mine. But I know people that are using them. But yeah, me personally never use them.
Gotcha. Yeah, so let's see. What else is here about my setup that's interesting? Okay, so I have a standing desk. It's about, I think it's a 5 foot wide desk, so kind of the size of what we had at work, which is pretty nice. And then one thing which is non-traditional. I don't know if you can see it in the corner over there, but I have a it's called a Wordly board. Let me just grab it real quick.
Okay, so I will vocalize what Zane is doing. He's walking away, walking back. Ooh. Oh, I know it. I know it. I used to have it in YouTube. Yes, many years ago. Yeah.
This basically looks like a skateboard, except there are no wheels. And on the bottom, in the middle of it, is a bowling ball cut in half that has been glued to the bottom. And nice thing about this is it's just like a way to, like, I'll when the desk is in the standing mode, I'll stand up on this Wordly board. And it's just a nice way to just get some extra movement in and not just like standing still the whole time at my desk. And I actually find that I feel a lot less tired when I'm spending the day standing on this Wordly board and balancing on it than if I were to just stand on my desk without this thing. Because, you know, there's this thing about our body. If you're like your muscles are moving in different ways, then they don't get as tired versus if they're constantly being stressed in the exact same way, you get a lot more tired. So being on this board, which is constantly wobbling in these different directions, is actually much more relaxing and probably a lot healthier than simply standing up at the standing desk.
Man, this reminds me how YouTube used to be amazing. Like YouTube is so amazing. You have robots there, you have different ski boards there. And one of the things, we actually have a place where such a board would be set in a bulk like a ski board, and anyone can take one and then put back one. And I actually bought mine before the company introduced this in YouTube, and I left just there when I left YouTube. I just give it a small present, token of appreciation to the company. So maybe someone who is listening to us now standing on my board and give it back.
It's probably in a locked YouTube office that nobody can enter with COVID.
Yep. Very, very sure. Yes, that's the case. Okay. What else? That's all.
That is like really all the interesting stuff about my desk. Other than that, I just have like a couple USB hubs and keyboard and whatnot, but there's nothing else that's interesting about here.
Okay. Let me chart my setup. So it's actually pretty close to yours, with probably first I'm really picky about the screen. Like I'm really picky about the monitors. I really like Retina. Like I cannot survive if I see pixels. Like if I'm looking for 8 hours and I don't see crystal clear picture. So effectively my main monitor is LG, also LG, ultra fine 5K. This is like 27, which has like 5K on width and 2K haze, I think, or 3K haze, something along those lines. And this is effectively the same that you will find in iMac, same resolution. So it's really nice from the picture perspective. And it also has a USB-C. It has embedded camera, and it has a set of USB-C ports. One of these USB-C Thunderbolt 4 with charge, which means that you would, when you plug in it with your MacBook, it charges MacBook. So you don't have to plug in a charger from the other side. And it's also a hub, effectively, because it has another USB-C port that you can plug to anything. It's very useful for me because I have Mac Mini, I have a work laptop. So now I need to replug only one USB-C from one computer to another. That's it.
What is the hub that you use?
Oh, that is a monitor has 5 ports. So,
you're just plugging the monitor directly into the laptop.
Correct, yes, because it has it's capable to charge laptop and through the Thunderbolt, and it also provides you a hub functionality. So now I need to replug monitor, and that's about it.
Interesting. Yeah, because I use a hub, which like can charge the laptop while having other stuff plugged into it. So it's kind of like an external version of that, but it's cool that monitors have it built in now.
Not all of them, but this one does. But this before I also was using hub, this just reduce amount of cords that you have. Now, I just moved to this one, ultrafine 5K. Before that, I was having ultrafine 4K. 4K was smaller in size, and I recently realized that I cannot go 2 inches smaller than I used to have. But ultrafine 4K had actually 2 Thunderbolts. And the reason why this is important, because you now can attach second monitor to the first monitor. And effectively, you can re-plug first monitor, and you both monitors will be reconnected from Mac Mini to MacBook Pro.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so you're connecting second monitor to the first one, because it would have now...
Daisy-chain them.
In ultrafine 5K, these busters have only 1 Thunderbolt. One, like, I don't know... Who decided in the bigger option they need to remove this feature? Like, probably because you have 5K, you don't need second monitor. I don't know. That's maybe the guess that they applied. And that's, yeah, strange, to say the least.
Yeah. I'm wondering if there might have been any data throughput limitations.
Yeah, because now you need to use first through Thunderbolt to pass the image from both.
And instead of like you're having like 2 5K monitors instead of 2 4K monitors, that's going to be a lot more bits.
Yes, yes. Very likely you're right. Probably that was the actual reason, but like. No, so
still sucks.
Yeah, it sucks because now I'm effectively using the interesting part. My second monitor, which is much worse. So this is like some default office monitor. I think it's I don't remember who develops it. Yeah, I don't know. Some normal full HD screen, which I don't like to look very often. And effectively, it has like many normal monitors, unlike Apple, it has many different ports. Like Apple monitor, 5 USB-C, that's it. Like that's what you get. Like there is nothing else, and there is no any button on the monitor because your macOS knows how to use this specific monitor. That's it. Like there is no knobs, like completely. There is no even power button. There is 5 USB-C ports. That's it. One of them Thunderbolt, but it looks like USB-C. And the second one, obviously, normal monitor, where, like, you know, you're looking at this back, there is like 12 different ports for all the cases in your life. This effectively means that I can connect USB-C to my laptop and HDMI to my Mac Mini. And because it's a second monitor, when I say go to sleep on my MacBook, then I'm reconnecting my main monitor. When I'm waking it up, my Mac Mini, it will realize, the monitor will realize, oh, I now no longer have signal from one port, but I now have signal from another port. It will automatically switch itself, which is like suboptimal, but it actually works. In the similar case, I can replug and just use it.
Yeah, that's That's kind of like similar to what I have right now. Actually, one of my monitors has that feature. The other one doesn't. So when I'm switching from like work to personal laptops, like I have to like one of the monitors, I have to like manually shift. Oh, go to this other thing.
Yeah, so you know my pain. It's just,
yes.
Each time I thinking, do I need to replug it now? Yeah, maybe not. The rest is pretty much the same. I have Kinesis Advantage, a second advantage keyboard. I love it. I highly recommend. Now maybe Zane, you will be the next person who using using this keyboard. I already convinced at least three folks to try it, who now successfully using Kinesis and not going back.
Man, Kinesis needs a referral program for you.
True, yes. Judging from the price of that keyboard, yes, I do not mind. obviously, standing desk, and that's probably it. That's the whole setup.
Well, what's the chair that you use?
Oh, the chair one is probably the only one that I'm not picky about. It's some really, really old that I bought 4 years ago, that now already have a huge signs of age of that chair, and it's still fine. Like, it just works. What about yourself?
Yeah, I'm actually in a similar boat where I have this old chair, which is like 10 years old. Mm-hmm. I got it from Target for like $100 back when I just graduated from college. It's the leather on the arms are like ripping up and it's like completely getting destroyed. But this is the most comfortable chair I've had out of like all of my offices. Like, this is the one chair I could comfortably sit in all day long and not feel any sort of back pain or anything forming. Versus like, I thought, hey, you know what? From work, they had the option for us to bring our work chairs to home. I thought, hey, let me bring this chair, try it out. It's some very expensive, like high-end chair that they have over there. I got it home. It just was not the same. It was like, compared to this chair at least, it was like pretty uncomfortable. I tried adjusting in all the different ways. It felt the same. And incidentally, this is how like at Microsoft and Google, like whenever I would try to get a new chair, it'd always be like really uncomfortable. And I would have to try a lot of different settings to like finally get something which would fit well. And if one day somebody happened to borrow my chair and bring the wrong chair back, that would be like a huge hassle. Like, okay, who took my actual chair? Where's my actual chair? And you'd like sit on everyone's chair to figure out where it is. Hopefully nobody's adjusted it thinking that it's their own chair.
I have a quite similar situation, but from different perspective. Almost any chair that I sit, I can sit all day long. Like, I don't have these uncomfortable chairs almost none of the time. But I still want to try these top of the line chairs because there is I forgot the brand. There is a famous chair that like
Arrow or something.
It might be best office chairs. Herman. Yes, that usually costs like $1,000 for something that worth buying, and. But I still want to try because for almost everything that I'm using in my life, not for almost everything, but many things that I'm using in my life, I starting with thinking, oh, you know what? This stuff that I'm using right now is good enough. It's doing its job. I don't need anything else. Coffee machine, screens, audio setup. Then I'm buying something that everyone recommends when they're reading reviews and they're realizing, no, I've just been cheap. Like, I've been cheap this all the time. No way I'm getting back. Like, my eyes feels better, my ears feel better, my voice feels better, my coffee feels better. Like, no, I just was cheap. It was not. So, and I'm thinking with the chair, I'm in the same boat. Like, you know, and my back will tell me after using this Herman, for example, this is the chair. Like, you should have bought it like 5 years ago. It's, you know, one plus thousand is big enough price for me to try and see. Yeah, but I still want to try. I really want to try Herman and something that everyone praising. Try to adjust it and see if I will feel any different.
Yeah, that's it. It's a very worthwhile experiment. There's a part of me, even though I keep getting burned by every single new chair I've tried, I still want to keep trying, like, oh, maybe that one could be really good. Maybe this one will live up to the hype.
Yeah, I envy you that you can you have this problem that you can find in chair. In my case, because I really can sit on almost any chair, when I sit in the new one, like, is it really better? Or, like, maybe because I paid some amount of money, I'm telling myself this is actually better. That was also fine, so I don't know. Like, so I kind of envy you that you can exactly tell. Yeah. In some sense, I'm using these that they can't... Sorry, go ahead.
I don't know. I would prefer being comfortable in all the chairs.
My back occasionally hurts, maybe, but it's not hurts when I'm sitting. But maybe, you know, I should, my mental model do not connect it because it's not happening at the same time. But maybe when I will use normal chair, it will stop hurting overall at some cases. So, yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Anyway, so with that, I wanted to speak about Parallel, but we have only like 10 minutes left before full hour, and my dinner is like 5 minutes away from my home. So I don't want to start the huge topic. That the topic is overall interesting. Let's at least acknowledge what have happened. So Parler got closed. It's a social network. We have 5 minutes. It's a social network that got closed. It was one of the networks that was trying to preserve freedom of speech to one way or another. And I don't know what to think about this, to be honest. I found... After Parler closed, they found that Russian internet has way more services that preserving freedom of speech now than in US. At some point, they realized, whoa, if you want that specific aspect, yeah, there are several, like three portals in Russia that I know that invites only and created specifically to preserve freedom of speech. So when you asking invite... And even giving invite, there will be 15 checks that will tell you, think twice before entering. Like, think twice before entering. Are you really sure? Okay, here is your invite. Don't complain. Okay? Like, you knew what you're getting. And I realized that I have no idea if there any service like that exists. I look on the diaspora. I think it's a fully distributed service that's like give you chance that no one can easily close it or moderate it or stuff like that. But overall, I realized there is nothing to, never know where to go. Like, literally, there is not the question that I want to publish something that I cannot on Twitter. I don't have such things. But nevertheless, I would prefer to know that there is such place. In case I need to use it, it's there. It's like with a gun. I would prefer to have it than when I need it not to have it. That's...
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, I wasn't really paying much attention to the... what is this?
Parler.
Social... Parler, yeah. I wasn't really paying much attention to what happened with Parler. I didn't know about this before, but I think it's like some conservative, basically it's a conservative social media site, which was shut down. How exactly?
Oh, no, this is not this is conservative because a lot of conservative got pushed out from everyone else. Let's put it this way.
Yeah, but they ended up on this one.
But that's pretty much the only thing that connects them. The AWS tell them, we're going to close you, folks. And they told you because effectively there was many violation of the agreement of AWS. They were storing content that was hate speech and other things that violate AWS agreement. And they send it to Parler many, many times. Like, here is the thing. Remove it. We don't want it to be on our service, which is fine. Like, they knew the agreement when we start using AWS. The biggest interesting part here, I can find almost exactly the same amount of examples in any other social network. Like, that's sure.
You need like an army of moderators to like fix that often.
Yep. And so this feels to me like a very political thing. But we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah. One thing that is like interesting is that this is almost not necessarily freedom of speech. This is like kind of veering into freedom of congregation.
Could you elaborate?
Because this is like, it's saying that, hey, look, if you want to congregate with these other groups of people and talk to them, you don't have the ability to like meet with them on our platform effectively. Because like, I mean, there's two parts to speech. There's like one of being able to just like say whatever you want, and two, being able to hang out with the people who you want to hang out with. And so that you can say to them stuff that you want to them while you're hanging out with them. These folks who are like writing all these kind of things, if they were to just write it in a private Google document and not share it anywhere with anyone, like nobody would have any problem with it. It would never even be known. But it's when you're trying to meet with other people and kind of like share ideas with them, that's when this is kind of becoming more of an issue, and you need to find another place where you can meet with them and even like get in touch with them.
Yeah, effectively the problem starts when you want to share anything with a group of people that not necessarily your direct contacts. Because if you got direct contacts, you created the chat and Skype and like or Telegram or whatever. This is effectively creating something in between. Like maybe it's not a fully public place like Facebook, but some social network where everyone accepting some particular limitations, acknowledgements, or revoking some particular expectations, or I don't know how to express that. And as I mentioned, I know many examples in other countries that has such type of closed societies, if you want, social networks that invite only, and they will tell you a lot of restrictions or things that you should not be expecting when you're joining. But they are specifically for people who want to accept it, and they are not public. Obviously, the social network that are Facebook competitors, they for sure also has tons of moderators. But the rest is, you know, the closest analog.
How do they make money?
Some of them subscriptions, some of them just big enough. So imagine that Reddit at some point will tell you that they're invites only. It's not going to hurt them. They still have tons of the people to continue to survive with ads and stuff like that. Yeah, actually, Reddit is the closest analog. The only difference that would be fully invites only, and B, it will be moderated by users. Reddit actually been accused many, many times that the most famous subreddits moderated by the same people. Like almost same nicknames everywhere. Here it will be more or less self-moderation. Like there will be communities that self-moderate themselves, and like even to start posting there, you need to earn some particular internal coins or something, which effectively completely cuts bullshit people who are writing for the sake of bullshit. But if you have interesting, even though controversial topic, you will eventually earn coin and you will be able to clearly express your speech there, and people will communicate with you. If you're cutting, writing bullshit, very likely you will lose all your coin very quickly, and you might lose, your rights might be revoked. And that is self-moderation. Like you need to piece a lot of people in the same sub-community, subreddit, if we're applying Reddit alternatives. But the Reddit, because it's completely public, also in the same loop. Like, it cannot allow you to say whatever you want completely, because it's completely public. Therefore, Reddit, even though it's the closest one, I don't think you can find any controversial thing discussed on Reddit, just because, again, it's a public one.
Interesting.
Anyway, my dinner is here. Now it's here. it's been a pleasure, my friend. We have not chatted for quite some time.
This was fun as always.
Looking forward, I will promise we'll be on time next time, and hopefully if we're both on time, let's allocate a 10 minutes just for chit chat beforehand.
Sounds good to me.
Okay,
I guess our listeners will not get to join in on that one.
Oh, yeah, sure. Obviously, there is requirements for both of us be there. Yes. With that, cool. Thank you, listeners. We will hear you. You will hear us, sorry. Next time, same place, same time. Bye-bye.
Catch you later.